On this episode of The Playbook, I have Jonathan Booz, inventor, Shark Tank contestant, and the founder of Working Stiff. And we're going to talk about how the experience of having a typical stubborn caller inspired this unbelievable business, which now has created a huge e-commerce opportunity. Join me for all of this and more on The Playbook.
This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host, David Meltzer.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs The Playbook, and I have an ultra entrepreneur, a plain old working stiff, Jonathan Booz. He's the founder of Working Stiffs. He's also an inventor, obviously, and was one of the first contestants on Shark Tank season 2. And we're going to get into that story. But Jonathan, welcome to The Playbook.
Hey, David. I'm really happy to be here. Talk to you.
You know, so funny. I was telling you about some drama with my three teenage girls and my wife. And I was giving their ages and you said, oh, are they twins? And now I know why, because you have an identical twin. And somehow your twinness has related to either the inception of the idea or the credibility of Working Stiff as a company. Can you share kind of that story with me about your twin?
Yeah, that's actually true. One thing is, if anything ever goes wrong, I just blame my twin. You know,
that's so cool.
It wasn't me; it was him. But it was when I started the company and actually came up with the. It was a product only first, but when I came up with the product and I actually went to him to say, hey, I came up with this idea of keeping a collar staying with a magnet. And because I was a guy that always came up with ideas, even as a kid. And so Joshua, who's my twin, him and I, he's like, oh, if you don't do it, I will. And that really pushed me to get it done.
I just got to stop you, because I know that you're smarter than your brother. Because if I was a twin, I would say nothing. And I'd let you go ahead and be super successful. Then I'd go into the bank with your ID and take
Yeah. Hey, it could happen. I mean, with all this COVID, I'm a lot heavier than he is now. So I don't know. Yeah, it was an interesting time. You know, that's back in 2005 when I came up with the idea. But we were talking about names, and in Europe, the word collar stays is actually collar stiffeners, and I was saying the only collar stays that work, and Josh was like, what about Working Stiffs? We're a couple of Working Stiffs. And I'm like, oh, that's great. So I slanged it up, because we're Italian and German. So a U with umlauts is very German. So I slanged it up and did Working Stiffs. Usually when we went to trade shows, when I first debuted, the Europeans would say, Working Stiffs. And I'm like, I'm just an American. It's Working Stiffs. But not many people know the term. I mean, we grew up, we didn't grow up with a lot of money. I have my twin brother and then two older brothers. And we grew up doing lawn maintenance with my father. My grandfather was a farmer up in New York. And so we grew working. I mean, we worked since we were in elementary and middle school, throughout high school with our father growing his business. And, here we are, Working Stiffs.
That's so cool. What job did you have when you came up with the idea?
So I was a general manager for two collision centers. So to kind of go backwards on you, like in high school, I wanted to, leave the family business. I mean, it's a lot of hard work. You're working 6-7 days a week from sun up to sundown. And I had this affinity for automobiles. So I was really interested in, design, custom paintwork and that sort of thing. How do you chop top a car, hot rods, all that stuff. So my father said, why don't you go to the technical institute and learn? And my parents were always very supportive. I mean, you talk about a family, don't have money, but they were very supportive in the things that we would do and really help us pursue our dreams. And that was one thing that I really wanted, to learn. And I really took off with it. Like I loved working with my hands and fabricating you got to learn every aspect. From out of high school, 19 years old, I worked for Cadillac as a painter. I was the youngest painter, put in more hours than anyone else because I had that work ethic. And then it evolved into, I was an insurance appraiser or an insurance adjuster for collision. And then I actually owned my own practice as an independent auto appraiser. And then I sold it. When I actually sold it, not many people even know this, but I sold it because it became either, it was either, my wife and I were probably married about 7 years at this point, and it became my life. And so it was, she was like, it's either me or this business, what are you going to do? And we were like becoming very successful, and it was a no brainer for me. I immediately sold it to a competitor in Orlando. And, but I was so green. I mean, I got married at 22. I was in my mid 20s.
Yeah.
And I sold it for like a song and a dance. But it was the best decision ever made at that time in my life. You know, and I think, you know, this, there's cycles in your life, your 20s and your 30s, your 40s. Right? So, it was a good time that I sold that, pursued, you know, starting a family, and, it enabled me to put a down payment on a house and all that great stuff. But then I was picked up from a franchise of a collision centers. And that's how I began managing a couple of the collision centers for this outfit out of Fort Myers, Florida.
And as a manager, you had to wear probably Oxford shirts or collared shirts all the time, right? Mm-hmm.
Correct. So,
and
yeah.
What didn't you like about the normal collar stays?
So they really don't do anything. I mean, to be honest with you, they keep the collar straight for the most part, but they really don't allow you to adjust the collar. So it's interesting that you brought that up, because when I was an insurance appraiser, an adjuster, I would wear the button down collars.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just button, and that's where it stays. And it's right. It's one place. And I kind of like that look. I didn't like that the buttons were on the outside, but I liked my collar pinned down. And that kind of like that, all those experiences, right? So that's what's interesting is like, if I didn't go through the journey I went through from even as a kid, my father putting a work ethic, my family supporting me, collision center, wearing certain, right? And it all adds up to this one thing. It's not like, and it was like lightning hitting me in the mirror. I was getting dressed to go to dinner with my wife, and she throws me a brand new shirt. And I'm like, I'm looking in the mirror. I'm like, if the collar was here and not here, I'm like, I look like John Travolta from Saturday Night Fever. And she's like, well, take the shirt off then. I'm like, no, but if it was here. And literally, boom, I came up with the idea and made a makeshift going out the door. That was the beginning.
Oh, you makeshifted and then came back and said, hey, this would be cool. And then you prefabricated it and designed it and came back to it.
I went to my metal days and started fabricating some metal pieces.
So you know what makes it interesting is that you had so much experience just – managing businesses, building businesses, you know, what I call the hard part or the less fun part of a business compared to thinking of the idea, right? Thinking of the idea is super cool, but you know, trying to monetize that idea is a long journey. It takes that work ethic and belief that you have and support that you were given. Through that journey though, you went ahead and tried out for Shark Tank, or was a contestant on Shark Tank. What period and where in the evolution of the working stiff genre was that part? Like, where were was your company at that time?
So that's kind of a funny story a little bit. So in 2005, I come up with the idea. It took about a year to get the product that was even like viable in the market to even test to see if it would even take. We quickly found out that, you know,
you stayed employed, right? You didn't just switch jobs.
I stayed employed. No, yeah. Key number one, I tell everyone, I'm like, do not quit your day job. Look at, you know what you say, David, when you hit the nail on the head, I was happier then. Like working two jobs, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, having to wake up at 6 to get to the, I was burning the candle at all ends. It was a very exciting time. We really, my wife was pregnant with our firstborn. And so we really were looking at working stiffs as supplemental income. This is back when no social media, you know, it's all this stuff, you know, it's like, it's crazy today to eat. And, you know, it sounds like I'm talking about the 1910s, right? It's like, it was only like, you know, 14 years ago.
Right.
But, so we literally started selling, my wife and I, out of the back of our car. We went to our first, men's store that I never walked foot in, couldn't afford anything like the store we were pulling up to. And I was smart enough to let my wife go in and to do the sales. And so she was familiar with sales and, you know, pretty face, but she's got a lot of, she's really smart. And so she went in there and the owner of the store comes out and says, he's like, this is amazing. Hold on. What are you guys, you're selling this out of the, how are you going to invoice me? I'm like, I don't even know what that means. What do you mean invoice you? Right. Cause we weren't from retail. Like it was so
right.
So he sent us up to Tampa, which was about an hour drive north. And we went to that store there where he told us to go meet somebody. And over, as we're going over the Howard Franklin Bridge, there was a big billboard that said Kirby's Menswear. I'm like, Amy, write that address down. Dale Mabry. We're going to go there after we go to this guy. Right. So in the first day, we went to three stores and we got three orders. And we were actually fulfilling it from the back of our car. And everyone said the same thing. They're like, well, how are you going to? I'm like, we'll figure it out. Don't worry. We'll figure it out. Just thank you so much. And so that was 2006. And then I was drive. So 3 years, 2010. So that's 2006, almost 3.5 years later. I'm in the cab in Manhattan going to my first meeting with Saks Fifth Avenue. And I get a phone call from the casting director of Shark Tank, right? So she's like, is this Jonathan Booz? And I'm the casting director from Shark Tank. Would you like to be on our season two? And I'm like, yeah, I'll think about it. I said, I'm going into a meeting. I'll call you back with your information. I click, I'm like, oh my gosh. They call me to get on Shark Tank. Like I was all excited, but I was trying to play it cool, right? they saw my product at Nordstrom. And we got with Nordstrom in 2009. So we were with Nordstrom for about a year and a half when Shark Tank called me. And it took us about a year inside Nordstrom where we got a call from Neiman Marcus. We got a call from Saks Fifth Avenue. We got a call from Bloomingdale's, right? It was so funny because at the beginning of the company, I wanted to be in these stores so bad, not realizing it was the best time to even get with Nordstrom when we did, because we weren't ready prior. When I was banging on their doors, I didn't realize I wasn't ready, but I wasn't ready. So we had accumulated about 300 to 400 men's specialty stores when Nordstrom approached us in 2009. That took like 3 years. And then Shark Tank, about a year and a half, I get that phone call. And that was that didn't guarantee me on air whatsoever. Right. What it only did was they saw a product at a store. It was a hot ticket item. I mean, it was a great time of the company. You know, like it was like we were found, but you're going, but I've been around for 4 years. What's taking everybody so long? Yeah. So I got a shot to get on Shark Tank, which we did. I can tell you as much or as little as that story you want to know.
What was the biggest benefit? Now you didn't get funded from Shark Tank, did you?
So ultimately, I did accept the deal from Barbara and Damon.
Yeah.
And then there was negotiations afterwards, right? Like, how, you know, what's this going to work? And sadly to say, they gave me a better deal after the show than what they showed on air. And probably to this day, I probably should have took it. But I learned I should have kept my big mouth shut on set. Like I overtalked like I always do. Not trying to be. Yeah, I don't know. I get excited and, you know, people tell me to slow down.
Count on that, my friend. They count on that.
Yeah. You're right. So I was on set for over an hour, which felt like a couple minutes, but they were like, kind of like, and then they edited, right? So everything I said on Shark Tank, I said, but I'll dispute with people. I'm like, yeah, but that facial expression wasn't for that. And that was that, right? It made good television. I really respect Barbara and Damon. I mean, I spoke to them afterwards. And looking back, I should have took the deal that Damon and Barbara were offering me. But at the time, you know, I wasn't looking to license out the intellectual property. Mm-hmm. It was like, I'm building a brand and I'm going to be building a men's accessories brand and all this stuff. And, you know, hindsight's 2020, I guess. You know, I'm you know, everyone's got two different viewpoints on investors and things. And for me, we've had things come up. We have things come up throughout the years of working stiffs, and timing has like never been right for us. Like, it's always like one thing or another, but you know, yeah, it was a great experience, great exposure, not the phenomenon it is today.
Yeah.
I don't think. But it, you know, back then it was more innocent, I guess you could say. You know, if I was on Shark Tank today, you know, it could be a little more maybe contrived. Yeah, you know, I kind of went on there with no expectations. Yeah, right. Just like, you know.
It's interesting because you're a very passionate person, which, you know, your eloquent descriptions are perfect for the playbook. They may not be in your 30 seconds that they give you on Shark Tank reasonable, but here I love it, right? You make my job easier because your stories are terrific and colorful and you have so much passion. One of the things that's difficult for entrepreneurs to understand is that I can tell that you're one of those people, you know, if you take factually your jobs and even your company, you know, nobody would be passionate about it. You know, my wife always teases me, oh, you're so lucky. You love what you do your whole life. I'm like, look at my jobs pragmatically, right? Who would love selling legal research online or even, you know, having a ton of employees and overhead, you know, but you're born not only as an innovator, but as an entrepreneur, meaning that you seem to be able to inject your passion. One of my true beliefs, because I grew up in the Midwest, single mom, six kids, the same type of atmosphere as you, right? It's up at 5 a.m. My mom worked two jobs. She packed our dinner in a paper bag. And so that's all I knew. And that was my superpower over any other kids is they eventually would quit and I won, you know, and when you were talking about working two jobs, that was the good times. And it still is. People ask me, Dave, why are you so active? And I said, well, that's all I know. But I think because of that, I'm able to be passionate about what I do where other people would, if I listed out what I do all day, although it looks really cool on TV, right? That's just for TV kids. You know, you were listening to my balance of life with my teenage daughters and like how life goes. But I find the light, the love, and the lessons and everything. And you seem to be that same positive person. You know, what is it that allows you to be so passionate, even though it's still tough work and you're still just a working stiff?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think it's all those things. I mean, even what you said, I can really relate to. I think there's, I'll outwork anyone. I'm to a fault, I'll find I'm very detail oriented. And I'm told even around here, like, come on, John, what do you settle? And I won't settle. You know, I deal with, you know, millimeters for me are miles, right? It's, you know, I don't deal with inches and feet. I deal with millimeters. So every millimeter counts. I kind of go over and above. Sometimes I over design, you know, I agree. But I think, I mean, what keeps you passionate is that actually loving what you do. And I think this found me in a weird way, like some of my knowledge back with, even with the cars and stuff, I found myself in metals. Now I find myself in plastics, really diving in to understand why things work and how can we make it better. And I, you know, things have come to me in factories because for me, it's understanding how the manufacturing process is done and then trying to add value. And I think that's even with work and sips is like the product adds value to the person, to the shirt, but ultimately to the person, how they, it's amazing to see people put our product in their shirt and it transforms them. They get tugging at your collar. It changes everything, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it does. Well, let me just tell you from personal experience, there's nothing worse than you're going on a big stage, you know, to do the annual meeting for Denny's with 7,000 franchisees. And you have this, you know, beautiful shirt and the custom suit, you know, everything's staged for you. And then, you know, you're in your hotel room, you get in there and that collar just won't, it's not right. Like you said, right? You look like John Travolta. Yeah. Or one side's weirder than the other side. And it detracts from your confidence. And then when you do as many video stuff as me now, and as I like to wear these shirts, you know, a lot of times I don't wear them. And then finding your product was a godsend, you know, because they're perfect every time. And you don't have to worry, especially traveling. You never know what's going to happen to your collar when you're traveling.
But that, I mean,
it's plastic things. Sometimes they just come out and then you wonder why it's not staying.
Well, let me tell you two things. First off, what you said, it sounds like you need to give those 7,000 people at Denny's a gift of working stiffs, but
that's right.
We can talk about that later.
Get a Brandon Meltzer.
Exactly. Let's do it. But going through what got me the stores, the test order with Nordstrom was the buyers came in. And then more buy at the time they had regional buyers. Then they brought in like the DMMs, the big wigs, right? And I said to them, tell you what, I was handing all the product. I was like, it doesn't set off the metal detector. And they're like, what? I'm like, leave them in your shirt and walk through. And I said, if it sets off a metal detector, I tell you what, we can call the whole deal off. And he's like, you're willing to put your money where your mouth is like that? You feel that strongly? I'm like, yep. I'm not going to lie to you. I flew back from New York to Florida with, you know, sweat beads a little bit, but I mean, I had traveled so much. Like, I've never got patted down. No one gave me a frisk, you know? I get a phone call. They doubled the stores, the number of stores, because he's like, do you know, not one metal detector went off. I called the buyers. I called everyone. And so they were testing me in 12 doors. They doubled it to 24. Yeah. And it was like, and that's the thing is, I think, you know, the product speaks for itself. And I think the, you know, our attitude too, is like, you know, I like to give value. I like to give value to the people I work with, right? It's not just about the collar stay itself and work. It's just the product. It's like, what other areas can we work together to make people feel better? Because I'll tell you, it's to this day, it's still, my wife and I, if we travel, we'll carry collar stays with us and see our guy in the airport and they light up and they're, what are these? And that's the best thing, when they never heard of you, because then you know you have a lot more work to do.
Right.
So 14 years, you go like, what do you mean you haven't heard of me? We go, thank goodness you haven't heard of us. You know, so yeah. You know that there's more work that has to be done, and it transforms and it makes you feel good because they feel good, right? They got a little gift, and what happens, David? They start talking to others. Oh my goodness, you wouldn't believe what they say. And we have those emails. It's really crazy. Someone told me, I was doing the first year at Nordstrom, I went and saw 88 Nordstrom stores on the floor with the salespeople. And I was telling them, you know, it's a husband and wife team. I mean, like and at the time our son was like, you know, a few years old, right? And it was very important to us as a family, but we wanted to, you know, put ourselves out there, and we would transform guys right there with the sales team. And it just energizes everyone. Then everyone gets passionate about what you're doing. And then that energy feeds when you leave. I just met the guy that invented this. And we had someone, a customer, say to me, this product is so simple and stupid. How in the world did you come up with this? I'm like, that's the best compliment anyone's ever given me.
Yeah, I know. That's the key to keep it, the KISS principle, of course.
Yeah.
Last question that is so relevant today is that obviously you've done tremendously well in the brick and mortar. Unfortunately, the brick and mortar stores aren't doing tremendously well.
Correct.
You have made the transition into e-commerce, realizing that it was nice to have 24 stores at Nordstrom, but it's sure nice to have 4.4 billion people around the world. Half of them probably need stays. And what have you done to make that transition and be such a great success on the e-commerce side of things?
Yeah, so we really, you know, I built this company over the years with people telling me you're not going to make it off of one product. So I ended up building a men's accessories company. We had over 500 SKUs. In 2016, we ended up having a legal agreement done with Amazon that protected my IP. So that was a real fun story, sarcastically.
Yeah.
But it was all for the better of good. I'm a worst enemy when I fight for morals and justice. I mean, like, that's just who I am. So I roll up my sleeves and I try to get that done, you know, to meet eye to eye with people. But that agreement and that partnership with Amazon, we own our business now on Amazon. That was a game changer for us. And we really started focusing back on the core product. And I do more. So I systematically, 2016, 2017, started focusing on the collar stays again. And I started dumping the other SKUs. It was getting very competitive. I was getting knocked off left and right on my designs. I wasn't willing to fight that fight anymore. So I was, you know, making bridges and moats around my core IP, the core product that started the company. And we do more today with less than 20 SKUs than I did with over 500 SKUs. I think the internet is a very viable and successful tool, but for working stiffs, unfortunately, our stores are a huge lifeline for us. So when COVID hit, we knew it was on March 13th. It was a Friday the 13th, March 13th. I said to Dylan, who's like my right arm in here, I was like, Houston, we have a problem. I could see it. Like, I felt the shift. I felt it in email. And it was the whole thing. And by that Monday, that was Friday. Monday, it was like we hit a wall. Our everything was falling apart quick. Our .com sales aren't really it's like 10% of the company. The majority, you know, online is Amazon, but you got to remember Amazon was choking down non-essential items, right? So So we really have pivoted and have seen success in helping our stores drop ship. So we weren't doing that. We had done it in the past, but we stopped doing it for various reasons, focusing on different aspects of the business. And that's the thing, is the playbook always changes sometimes, right? So you get handed a curveball and you aren't expecting the curveball now, but you got to sit back and go, well, that wasn't the plan. We were having our best year this year. It's sickening what we were going to do this year. And we were rapidly growing to get, like, we're in another heavy growth spurt. And then we hit that wall. And I sit here smiling, but it, you know, I've done right by my employees. We've really wrapped our arms trying to, you know, keep the business afloat. We have had to, you know, turn the valves down on expenses like everyone has. But really, I think what's keeping us going is being innovative, adding value again to our stores. What can we do to help you? We know, you know, everyone's in a time where they're shell-shocked. They don't know what to do. They have inventory that's locked up in their doors. We have inventory here. We can still fulfill. So we'll fulfill for you. We'll share the profits. Whatever we have to do to kind of, you know, partner with our stores. Because that's what, I don't look at our stores as clients. They're really partners of ours, you know, and you try to, you know, get things done together so that it's a win-win. Because, you know, this is like unprecedented. People haven't seen this. There's other trades and different things that are still going on as usual. But in retail, it's going to look very different when this thing blows over. It's, I mean, as everyone probably reads in the news, it's going to be, the landscape's going to look very different. So and we realize that. So we're doing things in here to kind of help open up some pipelines.
There's no substitute for hard work and being a working stiff. I put my money on you, Jonathan Booz, that's for sure. I certainly appreciate you sharing your stories, your playbook. You have been a great success and an unbelievable story and journey. I can't wait to see the next chapter. Come back onto the playbook, my friend. I appreciate you. This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.